This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 40% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale Last Chance right now and save up to 40% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 40% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Chris and Amy show on KMOX, and Kanye West, he always finds himself in the news for multiple reasons. Usually, lately anyway, it's been crazy stuff because the guy's nuts. So at any rate, he had a lot of anti-Semitic tweets that he sent out over the last couple of weeks, and he's made a lot of anti-Semitic comments, and those do have some real-world implications. They're not just, you know, thrown out there. It does affect people. To talk about that with us in studio is the regional director of the Anti-Defamation League Heartland, Jordan Kadosh, with us on KMOX. Jordan, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me. Nice to see you.
Okay, so let's just, I don't know if I'm going to read any of these tweets, but I will tell you, they're pretty bad. And then, on top of all of that, there was a Super Bowl ad where he directed people to go to his website. You go to the website, and all that's there is a swastika t-shirt that you can buy. That's it. So,
and to be clear, too, that the tweets that he had were pathologically evil in the sense that they were praising Hitler, and, you know, in addition
to
slurs against Jewish people. So, I mean, it was a all-on assault by Kanye West.
By an insane person. So when you see this, what do you think?
Here we go again. I mean, we've seen this before from from the artist formerly known as Kanye West. And it has real-world implications. Not only is it unacceptable, but the last time that he spouted all of this anti-Semitic hate, we could tie 30 anti-Semitic incidents that we catalog at the ADL on a regular basis directly to that incident. And so we don't know what the damage will be from this latest round, but we do know that these statements have real world impacts and they impact people's lives.
How are you able to know that whatever he says or the comments from him directly led to somebody doing something?
So it'll vary incident by incident. So in those 30, it would have varied. But inside the narrative of the constituent who is reporting the incident, they have space to tell us what happened, especially if somebody's citing the tweet.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about Kanye West has over 32 million followers on Twitter, meaning he has twice as many Twitter followers as there are Jewish people in the world. And
should mention all of his tweets are gone. His account is up, but every tweet has been wiped. I don't know if it's something he did or if the website did.
Yeah. So there's that aspect of it, the scale, the magnitude of what he's doing. But if someone were to say, yeah, it's just the ravings of a lunatic, let's push it aside, it's a one-off, what would you say to that?
I'm not in a position to evaluate his mental state. I don't know who is. But I think that, you know, we always have conversations about intent versus impact, and here we have both. Mm-hmm. Right? So the impact of the reach of 32 million followers at the push of a button that reaches a lot of people. Some might be persuaded by his status and his celebrity. And then we have the intent aspect as well, not to be discounted. He's declaring his intentions, right? And so there's no ambiguity in this particular case. He doubles and triples down and says, no, this is what I mean. And I think we have to take that at face value.
So, Jordan, you and I were both in the FBI Citizens Academy class, and they did talk to us about how a lot of this speech, there's, you know, people can't be arrested for it. It's not illegal. You know, there's a very high standard for that because of the First Amendment we have, which all true, but it still has an effect on people. So how do you wrestle with that, knowing that, hey, this idiot can say whatever he wants, and there's no real recourse for it?
Well, anybody can say whatever they want. We live in a free country, and I, for one, am grateful for that. But that doesn't mean that you can say whatever you want, wherever you want, and everybody has to put up with it. The same right of free speech that protects him protects me for calling it out and saying that it's awful. But also, he said it on a platform that is not the public square one way or the other. That is a contractual relationship. We all click, I agree. When we sign up for these apps, and there are terms of service, these are private companies, these are private agreements. The same way that you have me sitting here today, you know, I could say whatever I want, but you don't have to tolerate it, and you certainly don't have to give me a platform to do so.
Should Twitter, Facebook, all the social media platforms, should they do better?
We're advocates of a council culture, not a cancel culture. And so our Center on Technology and Society, which sits in Silicon Valley, actually works directly with social media platforms to improve their terms of service and to evaluate how they do in upholding their own standards. And I think if you look at this instance, you'll notice that Shopify removed the T-shirt that was for sale, is no longer available for sale.
Jordan, what about what we have seen on college campuses, especially after October 7th and the horrific attack by Hamas? And we saw these pro-Palestinian protests get to the point where a lot of them had pro-Hamas, pro-terror, pro-ISIS, anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish, anti-Israel expressions. Why do you think college campuses, or how do you think their response was, I should say, in your mind?
I mean, we publish a report card, so I think you'd have to look at it campus by campus. Some campuses did great. Others, we've given out D's and F's. We've seen improvements, and we've seen some backsliding as well. I think it's a race at the top. We want all campuses to get A's as far as how they deal with these events. But I think if you look here in St. Louis, when we had an issue, and you look at the composition of the people that were apprehended violating the campus's policies, 75% of them were not affiliated with that campus at all. And so you really have to ask yourself if the campuses are targets of this kind of activity, or if this really is growing up from the student or the faculty populations. I think the other thing I would say is that we just published a survey from done in conjunction with Hillel International and ADL. 83% of Jewish college students have either experienced or witnessed an anti-Semitic act on campus. That's not necessarily an anti-Israel act. That's just an anti-Semitic act. And so at some point, this has been normalized on campus, and it's affecting the lives of the Jewish kids who are just trying to pass exams. Mm-hmm. And they should probably be left alone to do so.
So how are you able to, or do you even try to parse whether or not some of these acts are anti-Semitism or anti-Israel?
We do. So we actually publish two separate reports in our annual audit of anti-Semitic incidents. So my office takes in incidents of bias, bigotry, discrimination, anti-Semitism of any kind, right? But each year, our Center on Extremism audits the incidents that we process. For the anti-Semitic ones, we publish an annual report, and there is a campus breakdown on those, which ones were anti-Semitic. Separately, we publish an anti-Israel climate report that is about anti-Israel activities on campus, and the two circles overlap, but they are not the same thing.
What about, can you explain to people a phrase we saw so often chanted on campus and on city streets across America and Europe, from the river to the sea, what that means and what its significance is?
The river that's being referenced is the Jordan River. It's what I'm named after, actually. The sea is the Mediterranean Sea. And, you know, for me, this one's kind of personal. In between those two bodies of water, you will find my cousins, you know, sending me selfies of themselves in their safe room while they're sheltering from an Iranian ballistic missile attack. And on WhatsApp, we can do that in real time. And so the idea that all 7 million plus Jews are going to be removed from that landmass, where are they supposed to go? And so there's a difference between being in favor of Palestinian rights and self-determination, which I think we can all agree on, and being against the same for the Jewish people who live in Israel, here in America, and around the world.
Jordan is with the ADL here in the St. Louis area. And how has this area particularly, how have things changed here over the last couple of years or even several years in terms of the amount of anti-Semitism that we are seeing?
In our last audit, the incidents in Missouri quadrupled year over year. It's a drastic increase. It mirrors the increase across the country. I would say that they were off the chart, but we were able to make a bigger chart, right? And that's literally what we had to do to accommodate the spike in incidents after October 7th. There was, in December of that year, there was over 1,000 bomb threats made against Jewish institutions. Five of those were here in Missouri, seven throughout our region. And I think that it might be lost in other people that, you know, these are temples have preschools. These are places that need to be secured because their kids are getting people dropping off their kids and then going to work in a very kind of everyday way. And my phone starts ringing on a day when a temple gets a bomb threat from a board member who dropped their kid at Sunday school, right? Just wanting to know if it's real or not, or if it's a hoax threat. And that's the kind of terror that is deliberately targeted at Jewish people because they're Jewish. It's not just us, but we are often the targets.
You mentioned the spike in the last couple of years. Historically, though, how far would you have to go back to feel like it was at a, I don't know if normal is the right word, but a more normal level? Have you seen it go up over the years and then the spike last year? How is it, I guess, going back 10, 20 years, would you be able to measure that?
So we see it go up over the last 5 years specifically, okay, and it kind of a dramatic rise. Maybe 1 or 2 years were more of a plateau, but it continued to rise over 5 years and then a spike. And so October 7th, which was the deadliest day for Jews in the world since the Holocaust, happened in a climate of incredibly heightened anti-Semitism. And ever since then, it's just been a flood.
And this is, as you mentioned, Jewish people around the world. I mean, we've seen what's gone on in Europe. Mm-hmm. My good friend is an Olympian for Israel. And in Paris, like things you don't realize, she's like, we're not supposed to wear, you know, our team warm-ups just to go get coffee. Mm-hmm. She's like, you know, they said, you'll be proud of where you're from, but don't necessarily broadcast it. When she was running her marathon, had to have special security, like always with her individually, because she's Jewish. She has nothing to do with what's, you know, going on, no matter where, you know, in the world. She's a Jewish athlete. And so we see that with her. But I know, like in the United States, there are Jewish people that if, you know, like wearing a Star of David might feel less safe than before. Have you seen that in St. Louis where Jewish people in our area think twice or feel more unsafe?
We're brought up like that. I mean, talking about your Star of David into your shirt, you know, not to wear it in public. I mean, this is a thing that I was taught as a child. It's not necessarily how I feel right now. I think that we have a moment where people can be outwardly Jewish and proud of their heritage and of their religion and to go about their day-to-day lives. But that heightened sense of insecurity that comes from all of these incidents taking place you know, it does make it a very personal choice. And I certainly wouldn't get involved in telling somebody whether or not they should feel safe. It might make that a different decision every day at this point.
Jordan, mm-hmm. what would you say to somebody who is not Jewish, who doesn't really face anything like this, how they can contribute positively to, so whether it's the conversation or just the environment, whatever they can do?
I think that one of the things that's often lost on people who don't spend a lot of time with this is that we're not always looked at as independent arbiters of what's anti-Semitic or not, right? So when from a third party looking at me calling something anti-Semitic, they might say, well, is it really, or do you see that around every corner at this point? And so having people who aren't Jewish say, you know what, that is a problem when they see something, actually helps convince other people that maybe they've gone a little too far and they need to pay attention to their own actions in a way that is really disarming, so that we're not in the business of calling people bigoted, that we're in the business of saying, thank you for giving me the space to say, I was offended by that. And that's the act of a friend or a neighbor. And that's what we need right now.
It almost, I hear you say that. It almost sounds like it's the victim here. It's the onus is put on them to be nice about it, about being feeling like they have been targeted in some way, to not tell another person, you know, you're being a bigot right now, and just say, hey, that offended me. I don't know. I hear what you're saying. I feel bad that it's like that, you know. You
almost want to say people to like yes, be extra like, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like you want to say, well, screw you, man. You know, that must be a really difficult thing to have to navigate.
I mean, we're not taking this quietly, right? Like, we're not walking through this environment and saying we're not going to do anything about it. People are organizing. People are voting. People are advocating. Our advocacy days have grown from 10 people to 40, right? Like, people are making the trip. They're doing what needs to be done. They're participating in our democracy and making their voices heard. And that's all great. But what can somebody who's not steeped in it do is that they can be a friend and make that space. I go into a lot of spaces where Jewish employees don't want to speak up about something that's happening on their, you know, a conversation in the work from home Slack on their internal company comms, because they don't want to stick their head above water and get slapped down for it. And just the act of being there and bringing up the conversation in a way where people feel comfortable sharing their stories, right? It just gives a little bit of breathing room. It's not that the onus is on me for experiencing some sort of discrimination to have to call it out every time. It's about what's going to happen when I do. So if I say I'm offended, I would really like somebody's reaction to be, oh, I offended you? Right? And have it be a question in the beginning of a conversation, as opposed to what we often get, which is, well, that's not what I meant.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure, sure.
That's what we're trying to avoid. And a friend can intervene that way to make sure that we don't end up there.
Well, Jordan, we appreciate you coming in and having this conversation. Good to see you again.
Nice to see you.
Thank you for stopping by.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Jordan Kadosh, Regional Director of the Anti-Defamation League Heartland, with us here in studio. It's Chris and Amy on KMOX. You all right?
Sorry.
That's how we always like to start out. Whoop. Whoop.
That was the most Midwestern. Whoop. Chris Ranji, Amy Mark Scores with you. We had our conversation with Mayor Parkinson of Granite City. Was that yesterday? 2 days ago.
It was yesterday.
Yesterday.
I was here for it.
That's exactly right, because you are the OG GC.
That's right.
Representative here.
I represent Granite City.
That's right. We were talking about steel, and I had asked the mayor about steel tariffs, how if the tariffs on steel are there to increase reliance on domestically produced steel here in the U.S., is that good for steel? But what does it do to other industries that rely on steel? Well, remember in 2018, Trump levied some tariffs on steel and aluminum, and I would argue the results were not great. Well, in 2020, researchers from Harvard University and from UC Davis looked at the results of the jobs that were gained or lost through the steel tariffs after 2018. And they did find that the steel tariffs created 1,000 jobs in steel manufacturing. That's great. However, It reduced employment in industries that rely on steel by 75,000 jobs were lost because production had to slow down, because it was costlier, because companies had to deal. And I'm just saying this, the economy and the market, it's so intertwined and complicated that while it sounds great to add 1,000 jobs in domestic steel production, if you're losing 75,000 jobs in the industries that buy that steel, that's not, that's kind of a Pyrrhic victory.
Yeah, and I would say that if I'm looking at it selfishly and only selfishly, whatever's good for Granite City is what I would want to have happen. But clearly, I would not want that to happen at the cost of 75,000 other people losing their jobs. I don't care where they are.
Right.
Right? If it doesn't matter if it's not local. And that's what I think. Look, the idea of a tariff sounds good. Look, we're going to tax more on what you bring over here so that we encourage people to buy locally.
Buy American. Great. It sounds great.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. We would all of us, everybody, would have to then be okay with just paying more for stuff. But we don't do that. We complain when we have to pay more for stuff. Look what we did during inflation over going back to 2023. All we did was complain about how much things cost. People stopped doing that now, by the way. Strange. But that's what we did for 2 years almost. Complained about how much things cost. So why would I think that we're all suddenly going to accept having to pay more for a bunch of goods because we've levied tariffs on other countries?
Yeah, and a quick note about...
We're just not going to.
Yeah, and a quick note about the complaining about the higher prices. You're right, it's not the most vocal thing right now, but if you look deeply into the numbers of that CBS poll where Trump had his highest favorability ratings yet, including the first term, the lowest numbers were on the cost of goods and inflation, where it was taken. Some of the political analysts were saying that is a number you circle as a warning sign that people are not thrilled right now. They're not livid yet, but they're not thrilled because maybe they're giving him time. But that looks like if the prices don't go down, that will be something that bubbles to the surface again. Canada, this is a quick note, people can correct me if I'm wrong, but again, just doing some research into steel, why would we get steel from Canada? Because obviously they have good working conditions. One political analyst, he was not discussing Canada specifically for a long time, but he was saying the tariffs on Canada matter because for some of our northern cities, it's cheaper to import because of proximity to Canada than it is to go from South Carolina all the way up north.
Right.
So it seems like a distance thing, which makes sense.
No, that makes absolute perfect sense.
Yeah.
So I don't know how this is going to go. I imagine, look, they have the administration, people like Elon Musk have said there's going to be pain. And I know he wasn't talking about tariffs specifically. He's talking about some of these other organizations that he's trying to gut or completely get rid of, shutter altogether, whatever it is. I know that's what he's doing or what he's talking about. But as a whole, the administration is saying that there's going to be pain. Well, if there's going to be pain, there better be a huge payoff then. Because if you're telling people it's going to hurt for a while, great. Whatever's on the other side of that hurt better be awesome for regular people. And I don't mean awesome for the richest people in the country. That's what I'm talking about. And I have very high amounts of skepticism that that's what they're going to do, that they're really looking out for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I'm looking into steel, looking into tariffs on all sides of the political spectrum. A lot of concerns because we saw what happened after 2018.
When we come back, we're going to talk to our guy, Bernie Miklas, because the Cardinals are in the midst of spring training right now. Pitchers and catchers are working out in Jupiter, Florida, and it looks like, at least for the time being, there will not be a Nolan Arenado deal. Looks like he might start the season with the Cardinals. We'll talk to Bernie, get his take next on the Chris and Amy Show.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Amy Marks Kors and Chris Ranji on KMOX. It is time for our semi-weekly visit with Bernie Miklas, who joins us every Tuesday and Thursday after the 11:30 news and the Bernie Miklas Report, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, an American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. Bernie is with us. How's it going, Bernie?
Yeah, doing well. I hope you guys are having a great show so far. It just got worse by having me on, but
dude.
Other than that, I hope it's been a heck of a show.
We've talked about steel. We've talked about chickens.
Yeah.
It's been a heck of a day.
Have you done that segment on egg prices yet?
Or? Oh yeah, we already talked about that. We mentioned egg prices.
Yeah,
it's a prerequisite.
It did devolve into how many chickens there are in the world, and there are a lot, Bernie.
And we murder a lot of chickens per year.
We do kill a lot of chickens, but at any rate,
I saw a story where you can rent chickens now.
Yeah, and you can get your own eggs. Hmm.
Yeah, everybody said makes everybody happy. I've never seen such an obsession in my life, but we'll move on now. Sorry,
yeah,
it's unbelievable.
Well, it started because there was a story in the Associated Press about how maybe they think part of the reason eggs are so expensive is because breakfast places have exploded, not literally, but they have become very, very popular over the last couple of years. So the demand is much higher than it used to be on top of the bird flu and everything else.
Yeah, that makes sense. It does.
All right, so let's talk stuff that really matters. The St. Louis Cardinals, do they lay eggs? Do Cardinals lay eggs?
Oh, did they? You mean in the offseason?
Well, no. Oh, dude, Amy.
What? No, I thought you were saying.
Don't be mean.
I'm not being mean.
They're in the middle of spring training right now. And we found out today that Alex Bregman is signing with the Boston Red Sox, or maybe that was last night we found that out. So that leaves a team off the table for the Cardinals to have dealt with, and that seemed to be a place that was kind of likely for him to go. So now what with Arenado?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question it was the most likely place for him to go. If Bregman would not have gotten to deal with the Red Sox, I think the Red Sox would have pivoted to Arenado. That doesn't mean that the Red Sox would have, and the Cardinals would have agreed to a trade, but it was a logical place for him to go. But listen, I'm not saying this to cover my behind, but it's like you never say never about anything. I mean, I still think there's a chance that Arenado would be traded. But let's be honest here. With the top contender off the board, I think the odds of another team stepping in are pretty long right now. The Yankees could be a possibility. They would be a better team with Arenado at third base and Jazz Chisholm moving back to second. But, and the other thing is, you know, their arch rival, their hated rival Red Sox just got better. So the Yankees could circle back and they figure, well, we have all the leverage on the Cardinals now, which they do, by the way. They may circle back and see if they can make a kind of offer that would benefit them, but not necessarily the Cardinals. There's some other teams we could talk about. I mean, forget the Padres. They just spent the last money they had to spend this offseason signing a free agent starting pitcher, Nick Pivetta. Does Arenado want to play in Detroit? They could use a third baseman. That's not exactly the ballpark that would fit him. There's the Dodgers, no go. The Angels, I don't know why. I think they're on his list. I don't know why. It's home for him where he grew up, but awful team, awful organization. So if he stays with the Cardinals, though, and I've been saying this now for 2 or 3 weeks, I really have, it's just not that big of a deal. I mean, he still can help them win because this is not a true reset season anyway.
Jeff Passan wrote that teams, executives around the league are stunned with the fact the Cardinals have not done more to move him or to move Jordan Walker or Sonny Gray or Ryan Helsley, that they're in position to really kind of go younger here, even though Walker himself is young, and Nolan Gorman too. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm still scratching my head over the idea that, oh boy, the Cardinals didn't move Jordan Walker. I mean, the dude's 22 years old. Like, he would be a junior in college now. I mean, what, we've closed the books on his career?
Well, if
I
you're a fifth-year senior, maybe.
There's a lot of old people in college sports nowadays, though.
Yeah, that's true. Red shirt.
But no. And, you know, and Jason Stark was reading a piece early this morning at The Athletic. He did a review of the offseason. They had a panel of 32 baseball people and granted them anonymity so they could speak freely. And one person, and the Cardinals were high on the list of like the least improved teams in the offseason. And one baseball person told Jason Stark, the Hall of Fame writer, he said he called the Cardinals offseason, quote, absurd. There's a lot of words we could use for this, right? The Cardinals are taking a beating nationally. They really, well, locally too, but the view from outside St. Louis is pretty negative.
Well, I mean, as John Mozeliak said at the beginning of his press conference yesterday, that he said, quote, typically we spend a lot of time rehashing all of the accomplishments for the off season, so this will be brief. I mean, you know, he's not shying away from the fact that they haven't taken a lot of action.
Right. And this is one of the, you know, I've been covering the Cardinals and, you know, since 1985, basically. I did leave to go work for the Dallas Morning News for about a year and a half, but I've been writing about the Cardinals, talking about the Cardinals continuously since 1989. This is the strangest time for Cardinals baseball that I remember or I can recall during my experience covering them. And that, listen, the COVID season is an entirely different category. But this is a really strange season because you have a president of baseball operations on the way out. He hasn't been able to get anything done. They announced they're going to have a reset, but it's not a reset. If Arenado stays, which at this point I would expect, they'll have the group of hitters that they have. They took 82.5% of the plate appearances last year, and at least the guys on paper who would be in their starting rotation are all veterans that were here last year. So how in the world could this be construed as a reset? But it's also not, they're also not a contender. They're not a team that's gone out to improve themselves over the winter. So it's just kind of been a nothing off season, really. And I would love to talk about some really positive things and maybe we'll get a chance, but we just have to be straight about this. I don't know how an off season could be any worse than this one. And I will say this about John Mozeliak. We were texting with all the members of the Gas House Gang last night. And I really mean this. You know, he's taken all the blows, all the criticism, all the stings, all the arrows. So Chaim Bloom can start fresh next season or after this season. I mean, Mo is a guy that everybody wants to beat up. And the thing of it is, I think Chaim Bloom was smart to stay away from being the team president this year. I think he's smart to concentrate on the minor league player development and rebuilding. Because he'll be able to succeed John Mozeliak, and he will be fresh, and he will not be tainted or tarnished in any way. So this is the season where basically everyone gets to swing, take their swings at Mo. And Mo, to his credit, he doesn't shy away from that. So, I mean, I'm not looking for false, phony reasons to praise him. But he at least is ensuring that Heim Bloom will get a fresh start without all the baggage, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, a listener here was asking via text about Bloom and what he's doing now. As you mentioned, he's dealing with the minor leagues. But what sort of, in the way he operates, what sort of differences will there be with the way John Mozeliak has operated? I always say that it's you work within the parameters of your what your ownership allows you to do. So right. it's difficult sometimes, but how do you see a difference between the two?
Well, listen, there is no way that I can be 100% certain about this, because the only way I could be 100% certain about this is if Heim Bloom told me this, and he's not available, and he wouldn't tell me this anyway. But I feel confident in saying that if this was a true reset type of season and the Cardinals had to turn the page and get younger, truly get younger. Given Heim Bloom's background in the Tampa Bay organization, where they're very, very successful for the low payroll that they have, I got to believe that he would not leave Ryan Helsley and Eric Fetty on the team when they're on expiring contracts and there's a risk of them getting hurt, or there's a risk of one of them maybe having a bad year. Because some people say, well, you trade him at the trade deadline. Well, you're not going to trade him at the trade deadline if Helsley blows out an elbow and Fetty's bad. Their value's high now. I would have to believe, given his history, Heim Bloom would have not just let them walk out as free agents. He would have gotten something for them that can help the Cardinals in the future. That's one difference that I could – it's all conjecture, but that's one difference I could see.
What is, as spring training has begun now, Bernie, this is day two of workouts for pitchers and catchers. The position players will have their first full workout on Monday. But is there something that you are really paying close attention to? It's kind of, other than the Arenado situation, it's kind of difficult to find the most prominent storylines here.
I think the Cardinals season, a lot of it, I'm talking about the offense, which was their weakest part last season. So much is being putting on the shoulders of Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman. And I know that spring training stats don't matter. I get all that. And we often, me too, overreact to stuff, whether they're bad stats or good stats. But man, for the Cardinals' sake, I hope Gorman and Walker have great spring training camps, because that'll at least send them into the regular season with some confidence. And they both need confidence after last season. I think both of them have really taken to the new hitting coach, Brant Brown, who's a lot different than what they've been used to working with in St. Louis. So I'm going to put everything on Brown, but I think he's a really good fit for them. You know, and you want to see how Wilson Contreras handles first base. I'm more curious of anything, maybe, about, you know, are they really going to give a young starting pitcher a chance to crack this rotation? Or is this just kind of like they're saying this because it sounds good? You know, Michael McGreevy in particular. I don't know what else he has to do. They drafted him in the first round. They gave him time in the minor leagues to develop. He became a really good pitcher last year. They brought him up to St. Louis, and he was phenomenal. What in the world would he have to do to actually get a shot in a rotation in what is supposedly a reset season? You know, so yeah, I'm going to be like a hawk on that one, because I'd hate, and Matt Pauley and I talked about this on Sports Open Line last night. I would hate to see the Cardinals do what they did to Zach Thompson and what they've done to Libitor, which is like, oh, you're a starter. No, you're a reliever. Starter, reliever, start. Go to Memphis, come back, reliever, starter. You know, that's how you mess up young pitchers. And I hope that they learn something from what they have done to some other young guys who had a chance to be starting pitchers.
Why would they not start him? Like, if they don't, what is their reasoning and argument not to?
Well, I don't think they have one. I think they can do this just by putting Steven Matz in the bullpen if he's healthy. I mean, they're not gonna trade Fetty. So there's one spot, obviously, you know, Matz, who Well, I won't get into his injury history, but we all know that. But they could move Mats to the bullpen where he is okay, or they could maybe move him in a trade if they're willing to eat some money. So that would be the opening. But I just hope that if there is an opening, that McGreevy will get a fair shot. I think at that point, he probably would get a real good chance to earn that job. But I think my problem is that this should be an automatic. This is why you draft a guy in the first round. This is why you develop him. This is why when you see how great he was when you brought him up last year, you just say, you know what, this is a, quote, reset season. So let's just plug this guy in. We'll figure the rest of it out later. I'm just the logic of this whole thing escapes me. If it's a reset season, then make it a reset season.
Bernie, we love talking to you every week. Twice. We'll do it again on Tuesday. How's that sound?
I love it. I hope you don't mind me coming on here hollering twice a week.
No, we'd prefer for you to holler more, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I love the hollering.
We are giving away Doobie Brothers tickets today, but not right now.
They sing that song, Doobie Doobie Doo.
Yeah. Da, 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 da. I think we already decided they didn't.
Oh.
But we are giving away tickets, and I swear to God, if you call right now, we are going to take your phone and throw it into the Mississippi, okay?
Yeah.
Do not call us right now, unless you want to call to talk about something else. But we will, before the show is over, give away tickets for the Doobie Brothers, but you need to be listening for the prompt.
Not
we will
now.
Prompt you.
Not now. And when you do call,
yep.
Remember, it's the special contest line.
It is. Well, I'll tell you what that number is, but not yet. All right.
Hey, we have a Twitter poll.
We have lots of Twitter polls every day at Chris Amy KMOX. Why aren't you following?
I am.
That's because you're a good soldier.
So yesterday we asked you, what kind of starting quarterback would you want on your team? An MVP winning nice guy.
For example, Josh Allen.
Or a Super Bowl winning jerk.
Like Aaron Rodgers, but he only won one.
Yeah. And what do you think won from our listeners,
okay.
Ranj?
Okay. I would think that it's overwhelmingly the second one. You'd rather have a giant butthole be your quarterback and win a Super Bowl or more, and you'll take the fact that he's a jerk and deal with it. I would say like 80%.
Well, it's not quite that high. So
isn't
almost 66%, 65.7% said a Super Bowl winning jerk. 34.3% said an MVP winning nice guy, and one guy said Joe Burrow.
Okay. All right. Hold on. All right. Let's talk about this. Who are these 34% of people that would prefer a nice guy who's the MVP?
The little old ladies, maybe.
It has to be people who don't really care about their teams if they have one. There just isn't any chance.
I think it depends on the type of bad guy that you are. Are you an arrogant, bad attitude guy, or are you a criminal? Because I don't want the whole criminal thing. And there are a lot of criminals that know how to throw a ball.
I will give you an example of that. I had friends who were Cubs fans in 2016 when they won, and there were a lot of them that had dissonance over the fact that Aroldis Chapman was there, and he was a bad guy. He's just a bad guy, you know, domestic abuse, that sort of thing. And they were like, this guy's the closer, so he's going to be on the field. If they win, he's going to be on the field closing out a game. He'll be the last thing you see as they win a World Series. Of course, it didn't go that way.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else pitched. I forgot who. But the point is, that would be tough to root for, so you would have to compartmentalize. All right, I got this criminal who just helped me win. That's really difficult to do. But like I said earlier, Aaron Rodgers, I said this yesterday, he's not a criminal. He's just a giant A-bag. I hate everything about him. But if he were still good...
Apple bag?
Yes. If he were still good and I thought he could help the Bears win, I would take him on my team and I'd put up with all of his dumb nonsense.
I know I hate to do this, but like, what about the guys that, like I said, there are, you can be a jerk because you have a bad attitude, because you're unlikable.
That's so unlikable.
That's one thing.
That's what he is.
If you're a domestic abuser
that's
type
tough.
Person, that's, I don't want that. I don't want that on my team.
I agree with you. but we only have two options. So you have to take those people.
Someone said we had both except for the jerk part, and that was Kurt Warner, an MVP and a Super Bowl winner. But not a jerk.
We did. Yes, it's possible to have a really nice guy win the whole thing for you. Now, that wasn't an option, though.
It was not.
We gave you two options.
No.
This is one of those hypothetical universes that we like to explore. Okay? But I can't. How would anybody say, I just want a nice guy who wins the MVP? What, there's literally something wrong with you as a sports fan if that's what you've decided.
Here's the thing.
Okay, if that's your opinion is wrong.
I think there are so many different kinds of, like, jerks. Because, again, it's, are you a jerk on the field? Are you actually a bad person? Are you just unlikable? Because I think one of the most famous, quote-unquote, jerks, the guy that everybody hated, we loved in St. Louis, and that was Chris Pronger on the ice, right? Like, he was just like he's a dirty player. We don't like him.
He wasn't dirty.
He knew.
He wasn't.
He knew how to bend the rules. And you hated him unless he was on your team. Right, and we loved him because he was on our team.
That's not the same thing. We're talking like Aaron Hernandez.
Oh, jeez. No, you can't. What? I think we need a new poll. A criminal. Would you rather have
okay,
a criminal?
Okay, all right. Do you want to update it?
I don't think so. I think that's a little dark.
I don't know. I think it's...
Who's the dog abuser? Michael Vick. Like,
He served
Vick?
His time. Leave the guy alone.
No, you can't. That's a horrible message. I think it is morally malformative.
He paid his debt to society.
No, I think to have a criminal on your team and to cheer for them is morally malformative and even harmful.